On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we look at what Matthew Stafford's success could tell us about Derek Carr's future. We also talk about Joe Burrow. Is he proof that the Raiders should move on from Derek Carr? We also talk about how coaches are flocking to the Raiders and how it's now finally a Raider destination. We ask the question, did the Raiders screw over Rich Bisaccia? And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
Fucking nightmares.
There it is!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, let's have some fun today. A lucky fan got to meet a member of the Autumn Windbags this weekend. Like a diehard listener, like a real fan. Yeah. Yeah. This little guy named Max Crosby, maybe you've heard of him, big fan of the show.
Oh, wow.
He got to meet his idol, me, this weekend. I was working the UFC. He was attending the UFC and, you know, I was standing there and he's like, oh, RJ, huge fan, monster fan. Man, can I get a picture with you? I love the Autumn Windbags. I'm like, sure, young man, go ahead. What do you do? And we got to talk. It turns out he plays football. I don't know if you noticed that, it was cool meeting the fan. In all seriousness, I got to meet Max Crosby this weekend and it was awesome. Gave him a handshake and a fist bump. And then the next day, he goes and becomes the defensive MVP of the Pro Bowl. Coincidence? I don't think so. I blessed you, Max, and now you got some more hardware. You're welcome.
All the greatness that you had just left your body. All the greatness that you ever will have, you just rubbed off on him.
So I have nothing left. Nothing. All of my greatness have gone into Max Crosby. Whatever little I could help him, I did. And now he's going to be
the best part MVP of you slid down the crack of your mama's ass and ended up a brown stain on
and the mattress. I think you've been cheated. So Max Crosby, more unassuming than I thought he would be. Like, obviously, he's big. He's an incredible athlete. His hand was huge, right? But like, I've met some monster, like, NFL players or some giant athletes, and you're like, wow. You're just like, you feel the gravitational pull in their presence. Like, I'm not the same species as this guy. Max Crosby? Like, just a big, big normal dude, which I think goes to show what kind of motor he has when he's not, for as good and as sensational as he was this season, his career in general, I feel like he leans less on pure athletic ability than anyone as successful as him. I think he's a guy that's just like works his ass off, high motor, 100% every single play, smart. Like, I think he's one of that just kind of reminded me like how much he is of one of those guys versus just like insane athletic freaks where it just comes natural.
No, he is very athletic. He also has probably some of the longest arms. Like, he has freakishly long. Oh, you said something about his big hands. Mm-hmm. He has really long arms too. Another big person, someone that I've met is Willie McGinnis, and he's just like, he has like a 30-inch waist and he's fucking huge. Like, his upper body is freaking, like, his shoulders are huge. He can scratch his knees without bending over, super long arms, and his hands are massive. I shook his hand and it's like a freaking bear paw. Just grabbing my hand, I'm like, oh, Jesus, fucking huge.
Yeah, just grab the top of your head and palm you like a basketball. Yeah, move you around like a
super nice guy, though. I've met him a couple of times.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was I was glad I was able to make a young fan's day. You know, something that we got to give back on the Autumn Windbags. You know what I mean? Got to give back. I was happy.
Fucking RG. He has no idea who the hell you are.
So, Super Bowl coming up on Sunday. Matthew Stafford and the Rams taking on Joe Burrow and the Bengals. So what a great story for Matthew Stafford, just dying on the vine in Detroit for 12 seasons. And then finally he's like, you know what? I'd like to get out of here. You know what? You know, guys, this kind of sucks. I'm pretty good, but because you're the Detroit Lions, I'm never going to go anywhere. And your franchise just fumbles around, even with Megatron and with some of my big seasons. Like, I just know I'm never going to win here. I've only got a couple seasons left. I've been in the game 12 years. Mm-hmm. How about you trade me? how about just work something out? And obviously we all know the history. Jared Goff from the Rams went over there with a, you know, and LA Rams sent a bunch of picks over with them to absorb Goff's contract. Here we go. Mm-hmm. Lo and behold, it worked, right? The Rams were all in. All they needed was a quarterback, and here they are, right? Super team. Matthew Stafford and this amazing Cooper Kupp and Jalen Ramsey and this amazing team going to the Super Bowl, right? So it got me thinking, because one of the comps to Derek Carr, I feel like, has been Matthew Stafford. I think when you think of like tiers and guys that have like similar careers, similar, not play style, but similar production, like, you know, obviously no two quarterbacks are alike
in the area. Yeah.
But there, I think it's very safe to say Matthew Stafford, Derek Carr, pretty similar quarterbacks in a lot of ways. Last season when we were talking, you know, we had one of our 1 million Derek Carr, you know, good or bad debates. You're like, all right, what's a quarterback that you think is comparable to Derek Carr? And I said, Matthew Stafford. You said, yeah, me too. That's exactly what I thought it was. And we did another segment comparing their stats and stuff like that. Lo and behold, he got to the Super Bowl. So what does it tell you, Soto, that Matthew Stafford, only a one-time Pro Bowler, never did anything too crazy in Detroit, always solid, right, but never did anything too crazy, goes to the Rams, and now he's going to the Super Bowl. Does that tell you anything? Does it make you rethink how you feel about Derek Carr, always saying Derek Carr's not the guy to get us to the Super Bowl, when everyone said Matthew Stafford wasn't the guy? He goes on a super team, and now he's there.
No, it doesn't. It's because of the situation. The way that you build teams and build franchises, the time for Stafford was his first contract, because of the salary cap implications. You build a team up around him before his salary cap hit was so big. That way you can spend money building a team around him. That's your first biggest swing. Now that he is who he is, the reason why it's a little bit different situation than Derek Carr's is because he was able to go to that super team that's already built. It's a little bit different in Carr's situation because he's taking up a big part of that cap hit, and you're still having to build around that team. It's a little bit different situation. It's possible, but most of the teams that you see are either that are in the Super Bowl are either teams like the Bengals, who have their quarterback that is still in their rookie contract where they can spend the money elsewhere, or just out of that rookie contract where they're still able to have flexibility where they're, you know, yeah, the money hasn't come.
I'm going to cut you off because you're wrong. Matthew Stafford makes more than Derek Carr.
I understand what you're saying.
Right. So you're saying, like, if you're gonna pay a guy like Derek Carr, you don't have enough money to build a team. Stafford literally makes more than Derek Carr. Derek Carr had a $125 million deal. Stafford had a $135 million deal. Plus, the Rams had to give away picks to get Stafford. So not only do they pay Stafford more, they had to give up picks to get Stafford. So your logic of, like, well, Gar wouldn't be the same because they got to build. It's just not true. Like, the Rams have been able. Now, again, they're selling their future to win in the present, right? But to say, like, you can't do it, like, they're literally doing it. They're literally doing what they say you can't do.
Yeah, I mean, so what do you suggest that they do then?
Well, so micro-wise, we'll talk macro, but micro-wise, I just want you to acknowledge that Derek Carr can absolutely be a Super Bowl quarterback with the support of a team, right? Like,
if the team is as stacked as the Rams are, mean, that's possible, yeah. But you have to also understand, when we did compare stats, I think it was during the offseason, Stafford was markedly higher than Derek Carr. It wasn't, the comparison wasn't like, oh, neck and neck. Stafford was still above Derek Carr when we compared stats.
In some things. I mean, he's not better than Derek Carr in everything. Like, Derek Carr has a better career completion percentage, 65 to Stafford's 63. You know what shocked me? Stafford throws more interceptions than Derek Carr.
Yeah.
Which I thought was like, oh, wow. I thought Carr was...
Stafford throws a lot more touchdowns.
Throws more touchdowns. He was all, and also Stafford's always had insanely better wide receivers than Derek Carr as well, right? He went from Megatron to now, or he had Megatron. Who's before Megatron in Detroit? That was insane.
That was
Was it just Megatron for the whole time?
That was his main one. Yeah.
Yeah. So he had Megatron for that whole time, right? Carr never had anyone like that. But I think comparable is more than fair. And you can pick certain stats to make Stafford look better. You can pick certain stats to make Derek Carr look better.
Well, look, these are the stats that I pulled up, and I'm not trying to talk bad on Carr, because I think it's, if you want to take two quarterbacks and that had a lengthy career, it's about as close as you're going to get. Maybe Kirk Cousins is going to can make an argument that they're both be in there. Cousins.
They're both
I understand, but I mean, there's going to be better and worse, because Stafford is better than Carr, and I'm going to show you why.
Okay,
but you know, there's if you want to look at comparable, okay. Now, a stat that I'm going to show you that we can bring up here is we took a look at the average defenses, right, that made the playoffs all the years that they were in the league, and the average was points allowed per game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that the average points given up was 23.5. That's the average. For those years. So I said, okay, when a team that Stafford and Carr was on gave up 23.5 points, so basically less than 24 points, how did they fare? A playoff caliber defensive effort. How did the team fare? Stafford won 68% of the time, and Derek Carr won 57% of the time. Now you work that out over 17 game season, that's 11.5 wins for Stafford, which is definitely a playoff team. And that's 9.7 wins for Carr, which this year would not have been a playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
So there's one stat that you want to take a look at. And that's not an obscure stat. That's how well do you do?
It's a pretty obscure stat.
Listen.
It's a pretty obscure stat.
Okay, look.
Very specific.
Listen, it's specific for this specific reason. How well do you perform when your defense gives you a chance to win?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a pretty telling stat. Okay? All right. You want to talk about, like, oh, our defense was poor, our defense gave up a lot of points. Well, your defense could have gotten shit on a couple of games that year, giving them a couple of 40-point games, but, you know, most of the time kept you in games. Well, how well did you do when your defense gave up, you know, a playoff worthy performance? Okay.
The Raiders did give up a playoff performance.
He only won 57% of those games. That's supposed 68%, almost 70% from Stafford.
Well,
okay.
They're comparable. This number stuff gets boring.
But look, we're looking at these stats, and it's like when you look at comparable, they're comparable, but there's a gap there. Okay. You want to take a look at the touchdown to interception ratio. Legs? Yeah, gap between my legs. If you look at touchdown to interception ratio, Carr is actually better. He has 2.27 touchdowns for every interception, where Stafford has only 2 touchdowns to every interception. But if you take a look at touchdowns to turnovers, when you look at Carr's fumbles, Carr drops down to only 1.2 because he has so many more fumbles. So he has only 1.2 touchdowns for turnovers, which is interceptions and fumbles lost.
Still better than Stafford, but...
No, Stafford's only 1.7. He hasn't fumbled nearly as much as Carr has. Mm-hmm. Touchdowns per game, Stafford's 1.8, Carr 1.5. So there's some other stats you want to take a look at. Winning percentage, Stafford...
They're comparable, but
Stafford has been better. Now, if you put Stafford in a team that has more weapons like he's in now and a better defense like he is now, yeah. He's going to win.
My point being, Derek Carr can absolutely be the guy in a good situation. Whereas Matthew Stafford was sworn off as never going to be the guy. Like he was the Derek Carr before Derek Carr, where he got all the blame for the Lions sputtering in the playoffs, never getting past round one, you know, just not doing enough. Like the blame was Stafford. He goes to a good team, goes to the Super Bowl, right? He was the Derek Carr before Derek Carr. So that was my major point here is like, look, like Stafford was Carr before Carr. And look what he's doing now in a great situation. As he's older, right? Like he's, I think, at the start of a round of physical decline, you know, he'll be going into his 13th season next season. Like that's, you know, unless you're Tom Brady.
He's in his mid-30s. It's going to start to get there.
You know, I think he's at the plateau and his best years are clearly behind him, right? But even then. So that was my big point. The other big part of this, does Derek Carr look at Matthew Stafford and say, I want that? I want to go to my owner and say, look, I've been a loyal soldier for you. I've been an amazing teammate for I never complained.
I've publicly,
right? Probably privately or not, who knows? Publicly never had to worry about me getting in trouble. I do every single charity event. All my teammates love me. I've been nothing but a soldier for you for all these years. I'm at a really high trade value right now, right? I have a super easy contract to trade. I got this deal from, you know, the Bucks, right? That want me or whatever, right? Like something like that. Like there's a team out there that wants me. I want to win a Super Bowl. Let me go. Are you worried? Or you're probably not worried. You're probably happy if Derek Carr did that because you want him out and you want the picks. But do you think Derek Carr looks at Matthew Stafford and says, he went out and crushed it. I want to do that now.
It's a possibility. It's definitely a possibility. There aren't any situations out there right now like the Rams, because the Rams had it all. They had the offense and the defense. Even if you go to the Bucks, offense
are pretty close.
Look, the offensive weapons they have. They have one offensive weapon. They have Evans. Their running backs are under contract. Their wide receivers, besides Evans, are not under contract. Their tight ends are not under contract. Their defense, there's a couple of guys. They have a lot of free agents. Part of the reason I think Tom Brady retired is because he knew a lot of the guys that came back on one-year deals probably aren't going to be back again.
So Brady.
Yeah.
Oh, what? Like, I don't have the best of everything around me?
That's one thing that was killing me. It's like, look, he came back and gave it another run. He's not going to be able to run it back a third time.
So not the Bucs, but what about like the Colts? Like Carr to the Colts? We've said that would be insane.
It would be good, but he doesn't have
Carr to the Broncos.
The receiver weapons, the Broncos, they're not going to send him to the Broncos. The Raiders won't send him into the Broncos. The Raiders won't send him. If they're going to send him anywhere, they'll send him to the NFC. And, where's he going to go? I mean, the Bucs.
Well, that would be their first choice. That would be their first choice. But Stafford went from NFC to NFC, right? It's possible.
It's possible. But he's not going to go in another West. It's possible. It all depends on what Josh McDaniels and Mitt Ziegler, what they think of Derek Carr and what their conversations are and what they feel like moving forward, what they see in Carr and what they see in their system and what they see a building moving forward. They have a lot of decisions to make. And it's anybody's guess.
I don't think Derek would do this. He's just been so adamant about how he just wants to be a Raider, wants to stay a Raider, wants to win with the Raiders, wants to do it here. I've been through all this crap and it's all building towards something. And then now there's like finally light at the end of the tunnel a little bit, right? 10 win season, a great rookie class. You've got, a bunch of like third and fourth year players that are getting signed to extend. That are really becoming a strong core of the team. Like there's finally light at the end of the tunnel, right? And if Derek Carr did do those things and leave, it would be the very first time he said something publicly, but lied and did something else behind the scenes. Certainly possible for him to do that, but it would be the very first time we've seen him say something that like adamant, I want to win here, or I want to do this, or I love this guy, or I want this thing, and then have it not be what his action, like his words didn't match his actions.
Well, things change though. So it really wouldn't necessarily be a lie because there's a whole regime change now. So I wouldn't necessarily call it a lie. There's a new head coach and there's a new GM in town. So they probably, I mean, not probably, but what if they came in and said, hey, we're looking for this. We're looking for this to happen. This is the direction we want to go. And if it's something that he's not comfortable with or something that he doesn't feel that he...
We want everyone in the locker room to convert to Judaism.
Right. Derek Carr. And if that's not it or, you know, something, it could be any number of things. If he feels like he doesn't want to get down
He might just not want another change of coach, right? Was it sixth head coach?
Even if he goes somewhere else, it's going to be a new coach and a new system. So that doesn't matter. It's who knows. So he can explain that away. That doesn't matter. But the issue moving forward is there comfort there with Carr, with the McDaniel system, with their vision? Are they aligned? Do they have the same? Not only do they have the same goal in mind at the end, but do their visions do they all line up, going in the same direction?
That's one side of the one quarterback in the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. On the Bengals, Joe Burrow going to the Super Bowl. I repeat, the Bengals are going to the Super Bowl. The floundering, pathetic, laughingstock joke of the league Bengals.
Not anymore.
Are going to the Super Bowl.
Jackpot Joey.
Unbelievable. And I said this to one of our guests, Ryan McKinnell, who was on before we played the Bears. We had him on. He's a Bears fan. One of my co-hosts at SiriusXM. And he's been adamant. Since Burrow's rookie season, he's like, I think Burrow's is going to be a game changer. He's going to turn this franchise around and he's going to have huge success. And I said, I don't think so, because it's one thing for a quarterback to be good and go into a decent to good situation and succeed. It is an entirely other thing for even a really good quarterback to go to a trash franchise and succeed, right? Like, think of all the quarterbacks drafted, the six rookie quarterbacks that played this season. One of them had a winning record in Mac Jones because he went to the Pats, right? Like, it's even if you're an amazing, like, everyone thought Justin Lawrence was a no-brainer once in a generation guy, right? And obviously time is to be told, right? Everything went on with Urban Meyer, that team falling apart. It was just his rookie season, far too early to write off him, but didn't succeed, right? Burrow was able to do that, plus some other things which we'll get to, but no question Joe Burrow was the catalyst for what that was able to do.
Yeah.
So this got me thinking, Soto, because you're always trying to, every time anything happens in the NFL, you somehow tie it to Derek Carr. You sent me this text.
Jesus.
You sent me this text, and it's true, you do this. Let me ask you, would the Bengals ever have gotten to where they are now if they didn't move on from Andy Dalton? Remember, Andy Dalton was the quarterback for years for the Bengals. Mm-hmm. They went to the playoffs every year, never got past the first round. There was time there with talent, Marvin Lewis, but never got over the hump, never did anything in the playoffs. They gave it a good run. They knew what they had wasn't good enough. And even though they didn't have an immediate replacement that was better, they chose to move on. And this is a really good conversation. Like, you really got me thinking with this one. Mm-hmm. Because obviously it worked out for the Bengals. It worked out. They're the freaking Super Bowl after going 4-11-1 last season. And they went. They had the number one pick. What was their record? 2-14 before that. Like, bad enough.
Yeah, two wins.
Two wins. Enough to get the number one overall pick. Right. So they went from the worst team in football to the Super Bowl in two seasons. Right. Amazing turnaround. And you're like, well, if the Bengals can do it, why can't the Raiders do it? Why can't we trade Carr and start from scratch at quarterback and try to find a Joe Burrow?
And right? I want to make this clear before you go any further. I wasn't advocating for this. I was just throwing questions out there. Like, hey, this is what other teams have done. This is like proof pudding. This is what they did. They had to move on from a quarterback who went to the playoffs multiple times. Like, this is
you've advocated for this before.
I have, but not at this case. Not in this case. I just want to say that. Please continue.
So the long running theme for you, Soto, is let's move on from Carr and find the guy, right? Joe Burrow and the Bengals were able to do it. Why can't the Raiders do it? Well, a couple things. One, if I had the number one overall pick in 2019, I would have taken Joe Burrow too, right? I think even the most diehard Derek Carr fans, if you had Joe freaking Burrow, a guy that shattered every NFL passing record, a guy that was a national champion, he was a clear-cut, once-in-a-generation draft pick, right? Even the most diehard Derek Carr fans would be like, yeah, let's draft Joe Burrow, right? Worst case scenario, we draft him and we go with Carr and we trade him, right? Or we draft him and we trade Carr, right? Like what do we say all the time about what the Raiders don't do well? They fall in love with dudes and they draft who they want as opposed to drafting the value of the position. Mm-hmm. Joe Burrow is worth, as we know now, right now, he's worth multiple first-round draft picks, right? Like, you get 3-4 first-round draft picks for Joe Burrow right now, right? So you draft him whether he starts or not, right? So they needed to have the first overall pick at the exact right time for a generational quarterback. Two, he panned out. Like, we've seen quarterbacks that we thought would be the next big thing and not pan out. Two, he's panning out. Mm-hmm. Three, he's got basically three number one wide receivers. He's got a lot of weapons, right? Not to mention a great running back. And out of nowhere, the Bengals got really good in free agency. Like, it was insane. All these guys they picked up that panned out, it was nuts. And then, by the way, they've got another once-in-a-generation wide receiver the next draft who played with Joe Burrow, who they picked up. So the long story short, so to answer your question, I believe I texted you, was like, yes, the Bengals proved that the Raiders could. There is a plan that you can follow and replicate. But the problem is 87 things have to go right in exactly the right order. And for the Bengals, it did. They got the right guy. He panned out. They had the right pick. They got the right pick the next time. All the free agents worked out. All the offensive jived. The quarterback and the head coach all jived. Like, it worked. And credit to the Bengals. They put all of their money on black 23 at the roulette table, and black 23 hit. And now they're in the Super Bowl. Okay. I'm just saying, to pull off what the Bengals pulled off, it's more than just get rid of Carr and get another guy that we think's good. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of things have to go right, and it just so happened to work for the Bengals. Very hard to replicate. Fair?
Fair. But isn't it also fair that it wouldn't happen if you didn't try it?
Correct. Yeah.
So the thing is my thing is this. If you feel, and it's just a big if you feel like what you have is not it, if you feel like what you have is not enough or not it or not what you need, it could be very good, if what you have is going to be just as big a crapshoot to build around than starting over with a rookie quarterback, it all depends on your philosophy. Mm-hmm. Would it be easier to start over with a younger quarterback because you're paying them less, because that one position makes so much of your cap if you have to pay them more? It all depends on your philosophy moving forward. It all depends on your front office and how you feel about that. What pieces do you have to build around on the squad already? Because ultimately, when they decided to make that decision, they also drafted T. Higgins in that same draft that they got Joe Burrow. So when they decided to make that decision, they only had Tyler Boyd, who was kind of not really a guy that they were really throwing to at the time. Mm-hmm. So in that same they got Joe Burrow in the first round, T. Higgins in the second round. So,
and they both panned out.
They both panned out very well. T. Higgins is a fucking
beast. Just give us one of your wide receivers, damn it, Bengals.
One of them,
you got
please.
Three. You don't need all three. Just give us one.
And they had Joe Mixon, who was kind of hurt early on, excuse me, a little easy for me to say, early on in his career. they made a controversial pick, which at the time they said, oh, you need to get protect your quarterback, protect your quarterback. And it's like, you know, another question that I posed to you was, we always said, you know, Carr gets hit too much. He doesn't have a line. He doesn't have a defense. Joe Burrow made it to the Super Bowl being sacked, the most sacked quarterback with the 17th ranked defense to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Carr made it to the playoffs twice. Like, should he have gone more often if he was at least close to being the guy? When Joe Burrow's going to the Super Bowl in his second year, his first full year.
Well, look, again, everything went right in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I mean,
it's to happen. But right? And that's my point is, like, are you going to risk?
Like the lotto, you can't win if you don't play.
Okay, but there's also the flip side. Like, look, of all the franchises that have floundered for years or even decades because they took a swing at quarterbacks that never landed. You got, like, the Bears, the Browns, the Broncos, the Colts are a Super Bowl. The Broncos are a Super Bowl team. They don't have a quarterback. Mm-hmm. The Colts, Super Bowl team, don't have a quarterback. Giants, no quarterback. Like, again, like, okay, it's like you're looking at the one amazing success story that was not one in a million, but like it, like, very, very, very lucky it all panned out. And then you look at the other 10 teams in the NFL that have no quarterback and they're nowhere. Mm-hmm. That's the other part. Like, okay, they played the lotto and they won, but there's a 1 in 10 chance or 1 in 20 chance or whatever the number is. It's not good. You're mm-hmm. much more likely to end up like the Broncos or the Colts or the Bears or the Giants than you are to end up like the Bengals. And look, and with Derek Carr, like, they're improving every year, right? They went from 4 wins to 7 wins to 8 wins to 10, trending in the right direction. You're very, very high on this new regime, right? With McDiggler, I'm betting porn stars.
Easy.
Now. McDiggler.
Actually, they went from 2 wins to 4 wins to 8 wins to 12 wins to 4 wins. So let's just be real on where they've gone. Yeah. Okay, that's how they've gone. So this is how the NFL works, man. Like, have a plan. If it doesn't work, you scrap it and you start over. And that's how you have to keep trying. If you're the Broncos, you're working the phones and you're giving up draft picks, because the Bengals, the Rams, they're showing it right now. What does it matter if you have all these draft picks if it works? If it doesn't work, guess what? You weren't getting there with fucking Drew Lock and all these bums you have playing quarterback anyway. Mm. You have this great team around you. You have a small window. As quick as that window closes is as quick as it opens, as quick as it closes again. You have this team around you right now, okay? Go out there and trade some picks and get somebody. Get somebody. You know
they're trying, but they can't. Like, it's not easy. Like, it's not necessarily.
There's a lot of
really hard.
It is hard, but the thing is, dude, like, sometimes these GMs out there are, a lot of times they think a lot like you're thinking right now, where they're so risk averse and they hold on to these picks like they're gold. And it's like, dude, players are gold. These top players are gold. You see it all the time where you get guys up off the scrap heap that end up playing a lot more than your draft picks do. And you're in a year-to-year league anyway. A lot of these guys get hurt. Or, you know, they end up, you know, smacking their chick around or something. They get suspended or whatever happens, right? Get the star players. It's a star-driven league. Your star guys, those are the guys at the top. You can fill your roster with all these undrafted guys all day long. You need a quarterback, you scour. You go out there and you get the phones and you work. And you, if you're the Broncos, you work the phones and you try to make the best deal you can and get somebody in there with some type of star power.
The Bears, the Broncos, the Colts, the Giants, the Jets, all these teams have tried that and they couldn't.
Like, but the thing really is, the Bears are not in the position to do it because they don't have the team around it.
they had not this season, but like they had like no. they were an 8-8 playoff team last season with trash at quarterback, a decent quarterback. They're making a run. Like they've had some really good defenses, just no quarterback to be able to carry it. Right.
There's a big difference, RJ, between being a team that's in the playoffs and being, and this is why the Bengals are so special. This is why Joe Burrow is so special, is because this team isn't like, it's nothing special. It's Joe Burrow is a special fucking player. And that's what makes the team special.
It's a team that found its stroke late too, right? Like I'm a Kings hockey fan, and the very first Stanley Cup, like they limped into the playoffs as the 8 seed, I take it back. They limped all season and got a ton of momentum the last month of the season and carried that into blowing everybody out of the water and winning their very first Stanley Cup. That was the Bengals. Like Joe Burrow wasn't Joe Burrow the first half of the season. Like he wasn't going nuts like he was. His stroke, getting comfortable. Again, it was his first full year, like you said. Like it's still, you know, he's still a carbon-based life form. He seems like he's Superman. He's still a human and needs to make these adjustments, right? How am I going to work around this line? You know, the speed of the game, all these things, right? So I think it was a lot of momentum on that one side. But my point being, and I think you're aware of the point, is the odds of us landing this are so low that I feel like the odds of building around Carr are much better when I look at the Giants, the Jets, the Colts.
We still haven't done it. We've tried to do it, and it hasn't worked. So it's like you're continuing to try to do the same thing over and over and over again, and it hasn't worked.
It's not the same thing over and over again, because you've tried different GMs and head coaches and different
Same thing with different people. So you've tried you've changed the head coach, you've changed the GM, you've changed all that stuff, but the same thing over and over again, and it hasn't worked. Now I'm not even saying right now to get rid of Carr. What I'm saying is you've tried to do the same thing over and over again. It hasn't worked. How many more times? And that's why I'm not an advocate of giving Derek Carr 5 years. I'm an advocate of extending Carr 2 more years. So you have 3 years of Carr. Even if let's say I hear the argument. Well, if you give him 3 years, you have to pay him more for that fourth and fifth year if you have to extend him again. If he's the guy but here's the thing. If he's that guy in this system, pay him. He's worth it. Give him the money. Who cares? If he's that guy and you want to keep him, give him whatever the fuck he wants. Pay him. He's worth it at that point. But he's got to prove that he's the guy. Don't give him the money now before he's proven it. That's what you don't want to do. You don't want to give him the money now before he's proven it. Even if it's like, well, you give him a little less now. Like, don't give him those extra years before he's proven it, that he's worth those extra years. Because what you don't want to do is you don't want to give extra years to a guy who's not the guy. That's where you fuck yourself.
No, disagree. Because even if you give him 5 years and you find out he's not the guy 2 years in, you trade him. You've got a 3-time Pro Bowl quarterback on a 5-year contract and there's no non-trade clause. There's a ton of value there. There's all those teams that I mentioned would give you a first round pick for look what Carson Wentz got, and look what all these quarterbacks.
Carson Wentz also wasn't 34 years old.
Well, Carr will be 32 if we go according to my plan, right?
Oh, 32.
He's 30 now, and 2 years from now he'll be
32. So how old was Carson Wentz? 25? 26? 25?
Right. And didn't have anywhere near the track record of Carr. Like he had one good season, but there's other quarterbacks too. Teddy Bridgewater is getting jobs. Jameis Winston getting jobs all over the place. Like there is definitely a market.
Not making what Carr would be making. Not nearly making what Carr would be making.
There's guys making more. Look at these guys.
You said Teddy Bridgewater.
Okay. So Jared Goff, right? You know how trash he is, but he's going to keep getting a shot.
Yeah, but you also got picks back with Jared Goff.
True. Kirk Cousins, Carson Wentz, Ryan Tannehill. He's not better than Ryan Tannehill.
Those guys ain't getting traded.
He's not getting traded. But I'm saying, you look at all these quarterbacks that are making more than Carr. You're telling me that none of these really desperate teams who need a quarterback wouldn't trade a first-round pick for a Derek Carr 2 years into a 5-year contract. there's still value there. So it's not as risky as you're saying. So it's not like they're stuck with him for 5 years and there's nothing you can do. You can move on from him. If Mick Ziegler really truly believes that he's not the guy. So I say, like, give him 5 years. There's nothing more valuable than a three-time Pro Bowl veteran quarterback that all these desperate teams would definitely take a shot at. And if he pans out, wonderful. You got him locked in when all these quarterbacks 4 years from now are going to be making $50 million a season. Like, that's just the way the market's going, right? Mm-hmm. And you'll hopefully get him for like 30, right? Around there is what the goal is, right? Probably more and hopefully less. It just seems like that's lock up a guy like him. If he pans out, mwah, beautiful. If he doesn't, you'll get something for him and you move on. All right, moving on. Coaches are flocking to the Raiders, right? We got a new squad. David Ziegler, Josh McDaniels, they leave New England, coming to Las Vegas, new regime in town. And like we've talked about 100 times, this is a very rare and weird and awesomely beneficial for them situation, because you never see an entire coaching staff change out after a team wins 10 games and go to the playoffs, right? Obviously, very unique situation with John Gruden, Rich Bisaccia, et cetera, right? We're getting some pretty good coaches coming over.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of new.
I'm very excited about the staff.
You're pumped on it, right? There are some guys, a lot of them coming from New England, a good chunk of them. And some guys are kind of leaving bad situations. I look at the setup, Soto, mm-hmm. and it's essentially two groups of people.
Okay.
It's guys coming, like New England guys, that are getting promotions to leave, you know, again, leaves a bad taste in my mouth, but a storied winning franchise like New England mm-hmm. to come over. You look at like Bo Hartigy, he's getting a promotion. He'll be the quarterback coach. Mm-hmm. And you look at, some other guys who are making lateral moves, but they're coming, right? You've got their new defensive coordinator, Patrick Graham. He's going from DC to DC, right? Lateral move. You look at secondary coach Chris Ash
yeah.
from the Jags, semi new to the NFL. He's going into a good situation, right, with some young studs in our secondary.
Oh yeah,
we got to figure out what's happening with some holes, but we got some studs there, specifically at safety and Nate Gobbs and whatever. And then Tom McMahon, who's coming from Denver, and he's going into he's our special teams coordinator, a special teams coach's wet dream with AJ Cole and our kicker and like. What a great situation, right? Pro mm-hmm. bowler and a clutch dude, right?
Carlson.
So it's looking like Soto, and I can't remember the last time this was the case, that the Raiders are a destination for coaches now. We used to be mm-hmm. like, we'd have to just like give guys a shot, overpay dudes mm-hmm. to get them into Oakland or to Las Vegas. Now guys are making lateral moves, leaving where they're comfortable, leaving you know, where they've got their house, where their kids go to school. And saying, nope, I'm going to pick up and leave for the exact same position in the desert.
Mm-hmm.
This is a beautiful sign, Soto. Like, there's a million signs that says the Raiders are trending in the right direction. One of them is coaches are willing to uproot and go over there
mm-hmm.
in a lateral move.
Yeah. I think it says a lot for the buzz around not only Ziegler, but McDaniels and what they're bringing to the Raiders and just the buzz around the league. Mm-hmm. I think that if you picked up on the press conference, a lot of the things that were talked about was being dynamic, being fluid, right? I think
you like a water, my friend.
No, didn't McDaniels like chuckle when he looked at Mark Davis? That yeah, dynamic or explosive, you know? Like,
how many
like,
times do you think Mark Davis said that in their meetings? Like,
right,
I want to like, go. I want to throw bombs. I'm gonna be the old Raider way.
Yeah and it's, and you look at Ziegler and you look at some of the things that he said in his press conference. Like, yeah, some of the names that we pick up, like they may not be the biggest names, but they're gonna be the right fit for our team. Mm-hmm. They're gonna be the right fit for our scheme, for our system, for what we want to do. And you're gonna see a lot of Swiss Army knife type players. Because you look at a lot of what McDaniels and his schemes have been, a lot of multiple type of schemes where one week he's able to attack a defense one way, and the next week they attack a defense a totally different way. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the MO of Patrick Graham. When he was hired as the Giants defensive coordinator, he was asked what his scheme was like, and he was answering, well, you know, they asked me if I'm a 3-4, am I a 4-3, am I a 3-3-5? Yes. I answered yes. I'm all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very multiple too, just like McDaniels is. And, you know, very similar to McDaniels and Graham, they teach the fundamentals and they preach the fundamentals, but they're very specific game plan. When you see this, this is what we're going to do. These are the formations we're going to call. When we call these specific plays, this is what we're looking for. And we're going to see that our defenses are going to be very game plan specific. And we're not going to be the same old Raiders that we've seen, where this is what we run, this is what we do, this is our game plan, this is our scheme. And we're not going to be so easy to game plan against, I think. I think that these are the type of guys we're bringing over. I think that's the buzz around the NFL, is that, hey, they're building something different over here.
We're going to find out who the dumb players are really fast.
Oh, really fast.
We're going to find out the dumb, especially on defense, the guys that can't figure it out. It's an offense where like Hunter Renfro and Darren Waller are going to thrive.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Like smart guys that know what they're doing. A Derek Carr offense, right? A complicated one. That half the work's done before before the snap at the line of scrimmage. Like that's a Derek Carr offense for sure. But then on defense, you know, can Jonathan Abram handle all the changeups that they're going to do, right?
All the calls,
all the different stuff, right? Like we got Morig and Hobbs, that'll be second year players, and they're coming from, you know, a very, you know, arguably the simplest defense in football, Gus Bradley's. And they're like, oh yeah, NFL defenses, I got it. No problem. Not a problem. I got it.
Not so much.
And then it comes in Patrick Graham. We're like, all right, here's your playbook. Bam. See if you can figure it out.
It's not going to be a Gunther style where everything's open. It's okay. Here's my playbook. Boom. But this is this week.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, forget all that.
Squeezing the nipples of a cat right there.
Looked like you were doing
this. Yeah.
And then, okay, now this is this week.
You can milk anything with nipples.
Right. I have nipples. Can you milk me? You know, so that I feel like the upgrades, if you're coming from New England and you're leaving that, I mean,
You're leaving for a reason.
If Josh McDaniels didn't learn anything from his falling flat on his face in Denver, if he was still the same guy, arrogant prick, not being able to get along with people, not being self-aware, they wouldn't come regardless of the of the promotion. I wouldn't leave a stable situation where I'm learning a lot just for an upgrade if I know this guy's going to get fired in a couple of years. Okay.
I hope you're right. Like, obviously
that's how I feel.
I hope you're right, because the New England guys coming over, they're the ones that are getting promoted. Mm-hmm. Right. Like,
well, those are
the ones where it's like Graham's a weird one, right? He was in New England. Then he was in the Giants.
They also got a new head coach. Ash got a new head coach in Jacksonville, so who knows if they were going to get kept there.
Yeah.
And they offered a good job.
Bo Hardegree's getting a pretty big promotion, right? He went from an offensive, quality control guy to quarterback coach of a franchise quarterback. So
McDaniels has a lot of confidence in him. He's making a quarterback coach. So,
yeah.
Because basically he's like the de facto offensive coordinator, because we all know Josh Downs is the offensive coordinator.
That's the thing. Is he just looking for yes guys? Is he just looking for yes men?
Well, honestly, somebody has to be the going to implement that shit during the game.
How old is
Harv? And help him out with that. How old is he? Who the fuck knows?
Young.
Yeah, he's a young kid. He's
a baby.
He's got to be smart as fuck, though, if he's going to be in there.
He's younger than me. He's 37.
Well, you ain't a spring chicken.
I'm a spring chicken. I'm a spring.
Fuck out of here.
My NFL coaching ages, I'm pretty young. I think it's the youngest.
Dude, that fucking tells you how young McDaniels was when he took that Denver job, dude.
33.
He was 33. He was young as fuck. He was nowhere ready.
When I was 33, my dick worked every time, no matter how much I drank. That's how young I was. And here he is. So now the only reason
I could have lived my whole life not knowing that. I would have been just fine.
Yeah, I feel like it's important that you know these things. So the reason we have all these openings at coach is because Rich Bisaccia is not going to be the coach of the Raiders. Obviously, you know, if you don't remember, he was the interim head coach when John Gruden was fired. Now he's all signs are pointing to him going elsewhere. And he had just the absolute adoration of the locker room. Mm-hmm. Almost universally, never heard a bad thing said about him. You heard players constantly talk about how much they cared about him, all these things. And it looks like he's gone. According to Ian Rappaport, the Packers are expected to hire former Raiders interim coach Rich Bisaccia as their new special teams coach. The unit was an issue in Green Bay last year, and coach Matt LaFleur goes a long way toward fixing it. Bisaccia is universally respected.
Oh, yeah.
So Rich Bisaccia, gone.
He gone.
What I'm wondering, did the Raiders do Bisaccia dirty? This is from just a little Q&A that our boy Vic Tafer from The Athletic does on The Athletic. And one of the questions was, I saw someone mention elsewhere that Bisaccia and company felt like they had been screwed over in not getting the chance to lead the team next season and weren't happy campers. Any truth to that or just internet tabloid material? Vic Tafer responded, they weren't happy. They feel that if Gruden were the coach all season and the Raiders went 10-7 and made the playoffs, there would be no question that the whole staff would be back. And they did it after the Gruden scandal and the Henry Ruggs tragedy. So I ask you, Soto, did Mark Davis and the Raiders screw over Rich Bisaccia?
I don't think so. That's a big if. You have to look.
Which one's the big if?
If Gruden was the coach.
Oh, okay.
Because Gruden was the one leading the whole thing. It was like he was the leader of the whole entire thing. You know who was making this all the decisions. Now that he's gone, it's like, okay, well, who is the one making the decisions now? Now you don't know who's making the decisions. Mm-hmm. The person that you know that built the entire thing is gone. So who's the one that's going to lead the ship? None of those people were hired as decision makers. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And it's a tough situation. It's easy to say, well, we won 10 games, you know. In the micro, yes, we're winning games. That's great. Fine. Okay. In the front office, they have to think long term. How are these decisions going to be long term for us? How are these going to translate for us winning games down the line in the future? How is Bisaccia's style going to help us down the line? He's winning games now. Yes. And I told you, like, he's we say this at the gym, if the first thing you say about a fighter is, oh, yeah, he's gritty, he's tough. If that's the first thing you say about a fighter, that fighter's taking a lot of ass beatings. Mm-hmm. Even if he wins, he's taking a lot of ass kickings. And that's not the first thing you want to say about a fighter.
Sure.
And if the first thing you say about a team is, oh, man, they're gritty, they grind into the very end, they're in a lot of close fucking games. And it's good in a in the micro. It's good for a season, but it's like, if you're not pulling away from teams, you're not blowing some teams out here and there. It's like, yeah, it's cool to have close games, but like, you can't sustain that. The ball's going to go the other way sometimes, you know?
Point differential is like one of the rare stats that's like really, really good on telling how a team is, right? Like, there's
we were under.
And we're bad, right?
Minus 65 or something like that.
Yeah. But a couple things with that. For one, like, those stats are like super skewed because the Chiefs kicked our dicks in twice and like drastically altered it, right? So like, again, you can't just like ignore that those teams, but like, that was unique, right? That wasn't the case most of the time.
Well, you take those and you take those away, we were still under like 4 or 5. We're still underneath.
It was you're drifting around 500. But then in close games, all the overtimes, we went undefeated in overtime, all the close games, all last second wins, I would credit that with coaching more than any specific thing. Like, that's, I think, where coaching should get some of the credit, is winning those really close games. Like,
in the blowouts, micro,
like,
yes. In
yeah,
the
like,
micro,
you've got, like, yes. Super good players, right? But to be able to, like, get past those humps and, like, have the team not stop believing, you know, I'm not trying to recite Journey songs here, but this is just, like, the direction I'm going.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like, and again, I'm not saying it's all Bisaccia's credit, you know, I'm not saying it's all Derek Carr, I'm not trying to put the credit on anybody. But speaking it with, you know, painting with broad strokes, getting your team in the high pressure situations and winning That's generally what a coach should get credit for. That's generally good coaching that does it.
In the micro, yes. But again, in the macro, in the long term, that's not – you want to be – good teams don't they don't have that many games where they win in overtime or they win in the last second like so many fucking times, you know? And you take a look at some other things. You take a look at how often did he change a game plan in the second half. Like, they just did the same shit where they're – you know, they just kept grinding and doing the same thing, like offensively and defensively, whether – they were successful with it or they weren't. And it's like those things, like look at what happened in when we were, you know, 12 win team 1 year and the second, the next year we got 1-4 or whatever. It's like, yo man, like we had a lot of close games that we ended up pulling out and the next year, like it just evened out, man.
But that's even more to my point is we were the less talented team most of the time, right? Especially like those really hard games, right? That Chargers win, that Colts win. Like we were less talented than these teams and we still won. So I think that's another part of it too is like, yeah, like good teams blow out bad teams. We didn't. Good teams consistently beat decent teams. We didn't. And good teams every now and then beat great teams, which we did. So I think that's the other part too is like, yes, I would love consistency. I'd love to be able to just destroy the Broncos when we play them, destroy the Giants when we play them. Like, okay, like, those are easy wins. Like, let's, you know, don't take them lightly, right? But we should be able to like, oh, it's going to blow out every now and then. And we didn't. But we got to remember, like, we were such an untalented team compared to the upper echelon teams that we played and beat. I think that has got to be added into the equation. And who gets the credit for us beating these teams that are clearly more talented than us? Normally, it's the coach. Normally, that's the X factor. When you look at your roster's better than our roster, the next thing that's most important is the coach. So, I said all these great things about Bisaccia, and I've been arguing for these last several minutes. I still feel like they made the right move. I still feel like Bisaccia, he wasn't a guy that could take over an offense or take over a defense. He was beloved.
It's about projection. You're projecting the future. You're projecting
moving. How are you going to do in the future, right?
What's your ceiling?
And normally it's like, all right, what's the best thing to project how you're going to do in the future? What are your achievements in the past? And he gave us the second best season of the last 20 years in the Raiders, which is, that is a fact, right? Again, still like the move, but I feel like Rich Bisaccia, what he accomplished is getting constantly understated. Like being able to take this team to the playoffs with everything that they went through and not having that locker room fall apart, not having the players, you know, get distracted, fall apart, blame each other. Like none of that happened. It happened in so many NFL rosters and locker rooms, not in the Raider locker room. So I don't think the Raiders screwed Bisaccia. I think they made I think they're going to say like, all right, who's going to give us the best chances to win a Super Bowl moving forward? And Mark Davis, I think it's Mick Ziegler. Okay. But what Bisaccia did this season, it was something special, something really special. And I'm kind of surprised he didn't get picked up as a head coach somewhere.
I'm not. I think that the league saw what I said. I think that it was a lot of close games. I think that it just, you know, lady luck was on our side on a lot of them. I think that we play with a lot of heart and a lot of passion, and passion is great in the micro. In the macro, passion doesn't win you games. It's talent. And talent isn't just on the field. Talent is off the field as well. I didn't see that he showed a lot of talent coaching wise. Mm-hmm. Rah-rah doesn't translate on it in X's and O's. And I think that was an issue that he had.
So if you don't think Derek Carr's the guy and you didn't think Rich Bisaccia is the guy, how do we get to 10 wins this season?
I didn't say that. There's a lot to be said for catching teams off guard. There's a lot to be said for
caught teams off guard playing hard. Games in a row.
Okay. Yeah, I mean there's a lot of factors, man. There's a lot of factors. Look, the Colts team that we beat also took a shit the next week against the fucking Jags.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Why? Because we put our fucking feet on their throat, ripped their heart out second to last game of the season, held it in front of them before they died, and then they limped into Jacksonville.
If that's the narrative you want to write, that's
because of the curb stomping that we put on them.
Sure, sure. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why. I think that I'm not discounting what we did. I think that a lot of people stepped up when they needed to. I think we hit our stride when we needed to. And we rode what talent we did have. And I think we just, this things fell our way, man. We had the ball last.
You literally just described a well-coached team. I'm just saying, like, everything you just said, like, you're basically describing a well-coached team.
Look, man, if you buy an NFL franchise and you hire Rich Bisaccia, that I don't think that he's an NFL head coach, dude. If you're really pushing for him that bad and you want him over Josh McDaniels, then you hire him yourself. Well, I don't think he's that great of a head coach.
But you haven't given me one good reason.
Because you hate Josh McDaniels. You don't want him to succeed. You want him to fall flat on his face. You want Rich Bisaccia. Then, you know, we all know that you don't want Josh McDaniels to succeed.
Basically, what you just said was our passing game is awesome. We throw a lot of touchdowns. We're one of the best.
When did I say that? In
football. Hold on. This is the example I'm giving. With this great passing.
No, don't give an example.
But Derek Carr's not the guy.
That's basically what you said.
Don't give an example
because you're like, this team,
they all stepped up when they needed to. They hung together. They played hard. Like, you just described a well-coached team. Like, again, I'm genuinely curious, Soto. I'm not like, it sounds like I'm trying to like pick on you. I'm genuinely curious why you think Rich Bisaccia isn't head coach material. And you know you haven't given me an answer. You just kind of said, like, well, I don't think he's the guy. Because when we try to give credit to how this team got to 10 wins, you're basically describing all the intangibles that a good head coach brings to a team. And so I'm not trying to, like, get you to contradict yourself. I genuinely want you to tell me why you think Rich Bisaccia isn't head coach material.
I genuinely do think that John Gruden laid a good plan for this team. And it was kind of like a set it and forget it.
He executed it.
And Bisaccia executed what was there. Now, the issue.
That's fair. That's a very fair statement.
The issues that I saw with Gruden not there was especially offensively with some of the lack of adjustments made in second halves. We didn't look great in some of the, like, let's say, for example, like, it's just as an example, like in the second half of the Giants game, we didn't do anything any different. The same crap that they were doing to us in the first half was the same crap they were doing to us in the second half, and we didn't do any better, right? Mm. So Carr knew the offense already, and Carr is just like having a head coach on the field, okay? And Olsen knew the offense already. And it's like, okay, we said it before. It's like, okay, you don't really need Gruden to implement an offense because Olsen and Carr have already been together for a few years already in the offense. They can run the offensive game plan. Gruden didn't really fucking fuck with the defense anyway. So Bradley had the defense anyway. So that's it. Like, it's like the offense was taken care of. The defense was taken care of. All Bisaccia did was making sure that everyone was okay. He just kind of ran the game time decision making, basically.
See, I've spent the last 20 minutes trying to get you to say that because this is what we literally said, both of us, about three quarters of the way through the season when Rich Bisaccia, like before that losing streak, before we got to 5-6, when we were like 5-2 or whatever, like won those two games. That's literally what we said was Rich Bisaccia is the perfect guy because he's not going to come in and change the color of the curtains and redo the offense in his image. He's not gonna. That's what we both said, right? He's not gonna like try to like turn this team into his team. He's like, all right, the ball's rolling. Let me maintain it. But he was also the perfect guy for making sure that all this controversy, all this tragedy, all this turnover, all the bad things that happened, he kept his team on the straight and narrow and had them fight for each other, had them fight together. And really, like, made sure, like, we can keep this team that's been through, like, literally the worst season in NFL history and keep them together. Because this is exactly what we said 13 weeks ago, right?
So let me ask you, what changes did you see Bisaccia making? Do you see them bringing back the same crew?
It's a great question. I wonder, because he's been in the league so long that, you know, he's got connections all over the place, right? He could have picked up OCs and DCs all over the place. I'm sure he had in the back of his mind guys that he wanted. What I really truly wonder is if we would have won that very first playoff game, right? When we were just like, we were literally one pass away from beating the team that went to the Super Bowl, right? Mm-hmm. What would have happened then?
Mm-hmm.
What would have happened then? Do you disassemble a team that won their wild card game or maybe more, like whatever, right? Like, I wonder if Mayock keeps his job. I wonder if Bisaccia keeps his job. And if they do they keep Olsen? Do they keep Brad? Like, that to me is the big what if. They would have won if that one pass would have gotten into a touchdown, right? If Zay would have ran just in the end zone a little better route and Derek threw the ball a little better and we win in overtime like we always do, then what?
Well, let me ask you this. What ifs. Look, let me ask you this. You don't have John Gruden tweaking the offense for next year. You run the same shit that everyone has tape on.
I would have hoped that Bisaccia would have and Mayock or whoever's the GM. You move Olsen to quarterback's coach and you get yourself a guy from like the Gruden McVay offensive coaching tree. Like, that would have been the perfect move.
Mm-hmm.
I feel, because I don't think Olsen didn't plan on calling plays this season. He didn't plan on being a true offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
He was there to like hold Gruden's playbook, right? Like, that's
laugh at his jokes,
right? Like, that's what he was there for. You ready to do some what up winbacks?
Yeah, why not?
Let's do it. Heart X Lion. I'm expecting a team friendly deal. Derek Carr doesn't care about the money, and we saw Brady do it with them in New England.
Don't count another man's money.
I think it's fair to say money isn't as important to Carr as a lot of NFL players, but to say just blatantly Carr doesn't care about the money is like saying an ass man doesn't care about the tits. Like, it may not be your primary focus and not just be like what your mind's on all the time, but you still care. You still care. Carr has kind of verbally laid the foundation that he's not going to play hardball. But his agent still gets his 3%. And his agent's going to want that number to be as high as possible.
Like when I like when players are like, yeah, I'm not about the money. I want a fair deal. I want to be respected. Yeah, it's about the money, bro. Yeah.
It's about respect.
Yeah.
In the form of money.
How do you respect me? With that paper.
But this is what the Raiders should do. This is what Ziegler should do. Say, hey, Carr. Hey, Derek. Hey, DC. Whatever nickname I've given you. You've been saying all season long that you just care about winning, right? You just want to win here. Okay. I'm going to need you to take this deal is probably less than what you expected, but the $10 million I'm saving, I'm going to go get Devontae Adams. I'm going to get your boy with the money that we're saving. That's your negotiating tactic with Derek Carr. Like, all the things you said.
That's exactly why I said.
Let's use that money and let's re-sign Renfro. Let's re-sign Crosby. Let's go get you Devontae.
It's exactly what I said. I said, we can offer you this, which is lower than what your going rate would be normally. But this is the plan for the extra money. Now, the issue is you would have to implement the latter first before you sign Carr. Because he's not going to sign without you signing Devontae first. Sign Devontae first and then sign Carr. But that's exactly what I said. Look, let's agree to this in principle. Now let me go ahead and get Devontae.
In the nine stages of negotiation, that's like step number four for Ziegler, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ziegler. Like that's his like, okay, we're starting here. You're starting here. We're starting there. We're negotiating. Take less and I'll go sign these guys and make the team better. Let's go to Jeffrey Allen. Is Josh McDaniels related to Stormy McDaniels? Just curious. Stormy Daniels. We should do some research on that, Soto.
Look, if we need to, I could ask Donald Trump.
You just smell his dick? Be like, yeah, that smells like Josh.
No. I'm not going to smell his dick. No. Maybe I could smell his
stool
adult
sample?
His adult diaper.
Diapers, right? Like I said, stool sample. That's one. That would be a great name for a porno for Stormy Daniels if she was like in Ireland, like a St. Patrick's Day themed porno, Stormy McDaniel. Not like, the name, not the adult, name of the title,
you,
but
you meant adult diaper.
Top Flight Entertainment. Pronouns, pal. Was that a Bruce Pritchard, Vince McMahon reference in my Raiders news? I love it. So when you were telling me pronouns, pal, multiple shows ago, it went right over my head. Mm-hmm. Not a clue what you were talking about. But you brought it up a couple times. You had a shit-eating grin when you were saying it. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, he said something funny to somebody, but I had no idea what you were talking about.
Yeah, there's a podcast that I listen to. It's called Something to Wrestle. Something to Wrestle. Yeah, that's what it's called. And it's with a guy named Bruce Pritchard who worked for WWF since he was like 25 years old. He started in like 1987. So he was like there for all like the golden age of like wrestling. And he worked like every single day with Vince McMahon. And he had all these stories about working with these wrestlers and these different events. And he has all these different sayings like about Vince McMahon. And one of the things was he didn't like you when you were announcing. He didn't like you saying, oh, he body slammed him. Like, no, he wanted to say RJ really body slammed Soto. Like he wants you to say their names. So be like, oh, pronouns, pal. So when I say pronouns, pal, that's me doing an impression of Bruce Pritchard doing an impression of Vince McMahon.
Got it. And now it's going to be me doing impression of you, doing impression of Pritchard, doing impression of Vince McMahon when I inevitably start doing it.
Honestly, it is like a good broadcasting thing to use their name. So you're not saying him, yeah. Her, like them. It is a good practice.
And I learned something today. We're all getting better in our own special ways. All right, that's it for us. Coaching staff basically set. The next big news that we're waiting on is Derek Carr, free agencies, looking at the draft, offseason. Really going to start kicking off here after the Super Bowl's over. And we'll keep you up to date on all that. But until then,
knock on wood if you're with me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel as well. A lot of bonus content on the YouTube channel that we don't want you to miss. Until next time, later.